Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, everybody, before we get started with this week's episode, which is all about relationships, a sponsor that I can vouch for that actually helps on the relationship front, and that is Blue Apron. It is the perfect thing to do with a significant other. My wife and I have been cooking with Blue Apron on and off for a couple of years now, actually, and it started when we were gifted a few free meals by some friends of ours, and we've never looked back. And I am about to gift you, as a Backseat Rider listener, the very same thing by going to blueapron.com/backseat. You can get 3 meals for free with free shipping. And if you do it this week, you'll get to make skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits, garlic butter shrimp, and several other really tasty looking meals. And here's something new. Blue Apron knows you're busy, so now they are offering 30-minute meals. And these meals are made with the same flavor and same farm-fresh ingredients as all the other recipes, but the prep time is a half hour or less. Again, it's the perfect thing to do with somebody else, crack a bottle of wine, and get cooking. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/backseat. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
How recent was the breakup?
The Ides of March. It was just so clear right then and there. I was like, fuck that, you've done that way too many times.
And I just asked her, you know, if she had been cheating on me, and she said no. And I was like, are you planning on it? Yep. I was like, all right, well, I'll sleep on the couch tonight. And I had an apartment in 2 days and moved out.
So one of my last, before the current relationships, I actually started feeling something, and it totally messed everything up. I didn't like it because it wasn't reciprocated.
So we kept being like, oh, well, you know, we're going to figure this out. It'll be fine. We never did figure it out.
Lots of things can lead to breakups, all right? But I heard some phrasing about breakups this past week from a really good friend of mine that I'd never heard before. And here's the situation. His girlfriend of about a year just broke up with him. It happened 2 or 3 days before this conversation. So the wounds still very fresh. And we were sitting in my backyard when he said to me and my wife, who was also there, he said, when it comes to relationships, you're one of two things. You're either a reacher or a settler. Now, by reacher, what he meant was people who are reaching after that perfect partner, which is a good thing. But the way he meant it, that includes people who, quote unquote, date up. And sometimes people say they outkick their coverage or try to be with someone who, for whatever reason in their mind, is above them in some way. Now, on the flip side, he said there are settlers as well. And the settlers are the people who are settling for someone. The person they're with is fine, but in their minds, they think they could maybe do better and that the perfect relationship maybe just isn't in the cards for them. So the person they're with is good enough. Settlers stay in relationships out of convenience or stability, or perhaps most commonly, out of fear of being alone. Now, my friend characterized himself as a reacher, which I think is great. I think ideally we should all be reachers. But that night, he was radiating this kind of doubt, like maybe he should just retire as a reacher and lower his standards now that he's getting into his late 30s. Now, me being a left brain person, I feel like my instinct is to always try to file things into these neat little categories. So this theory of reachers and settlers stuck with me, and the three of us agreed that it might be worthwhile to run it past some of my passengers this week.
But, I mean, like, if you take me as an example, like, am I a reacher because my wife's a doctor and I'm a musician? You know what I mean? A musician that doesn't make dick.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive Lyft and whoever ends up in the backseat of my car becomes the cast of this show. And the musician who I'm talking to right here, he was in town this past week to keep his wife, who's a doctor, to keep her company. They're from Rockford, which is a smaller city about 2 hours west of Chicago, and she had to be downtown for a conference, so he came with her. And the day I picked him up, she was busy with other doctors at that conference, and he was killing time by heading up to Guitar Center on the north side, which is why he needed a lift.
I mean, my primary is the vocals.
Okay.
But I'm a half-decent guitar player. I can play keyboards, drums, bass, brass instruments.
He's 36 years old. He's originally from Wyoming, and he and his wife have been married for going on 4 years now. And he says to the outside world, it might appear that he's the reacher and his wife is the settler, but that's not the case.
So, you know, like, my income is, I'll produce, like, a couple of albums, like, every year, and I might make, like, $4,000 or $5,000 off of that, and then just whatever I make on a weekend with my cover band. But I don't know, does that mean I'm a reacher and she's a settler? I don't really think so either way, because I think we have a mutually beneficial relationship, and if it wasn't that way, I don't think we'd, you know, stay together.
What kind of doctor is she?
She's a family practice, so general practitioner.
Okay.
But
and what do you feel like about you makes it so, like, yeah, you're the right match?
Probably patience and my willingness to do anything I can to help her and make our lives better, you know? That'd be the only thing. I mean, initially, I think she thought I was pretty, because she found me on the internet, you know, so. And I had just gotten out of a long-term relationship, like, you know, I had a fiance and everything. And she was kind of freaking dumb, so really what I wanted was a brain after that. That was, like, all I cared about. And luckily it came in a nice package anyway, so. But.
So had you had been settling, and you were close to tying the knot.
Yeah, I think I was settling at that point. Yeah. I don't know. Partially I was settling, but also partially not. It was like a very easy relationship because we never really said anything to each other. So, you know, when you are pretty easygoing, you know, there's not really anything to piss you off, you know, until the very end of it. So,
what pissed you off at the very end of it?
It was one of those things where she started getting into a different, like, group of people, you know, and not coming home at night and stuff like that, not letting me know where she was and all that kind of thing. Which is, you know, like, I didn't really have that big an issue with, like, being a musician, being out and about at night was kind of what I did. But it just got to a point where she was acting kind of crazy, and I just asked her, you know, if she had been cheating on me, and she said no, and I was like, are you planning on it? Yep. I was like, all right, well, I'll sleep on the couch tonight, and I had an apartment in 2 days and moved out.
Wow.
But, yeah. I don't know. It was one of those things where it was really easy, you know, to be in that relationship. And I think that's why we're going to get married. But I don't know. Probably a little bit too young.
I've been in a relationship that reminds me just of what you said, where it was just easy. We didn't really talk that much. We didn't really, like, push. We didn't, like, push each other. We just kind of, like, existed, like, kind of coexisted a little bit.
Well, we never really talked about anything. She never had anything to say. about anything. You know what I mean? Like, nothing of import. Like, if I want to discuss something interesting, you know, to me, I guess, you know, like some science or, you know, some kind of new thing or politics,
yeah, like
or
anything like that. Topic, yeah.
Anything like that. She had no idea what the hell I was talking about the whole time. So, yeah.
Fast forward to his marriage. And despite the fact that he and his wife have these polar opposite careers, intellectually, they're compatible.
We're alike in the intellectual department. You know what I mean? Like, we pretty much feel the same way about, you know, politics, religion, you know, all that kind of stuff. Not interested in kids, all that kind of thing.
Okay. As for the labels of reacher and settler?
Not really, man. I think what having a good relationship boils down to is just whether you can forgive somebody for their faults or not. You know what I mean? Everybody's not perfect. You can be a 10 on the look scale and be a 2 on the attitude, you know? But I guess it's what you're willing to put up with in your life to be with somebody. So when you do have those good moments, it's good in front of you. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's settlers and reachers. I think there's just people that can deal with other people's, like, faults. Yeah.
Reachers, settlers, is there truth there?
I think there's absolutely truth there. I don't think that's across the board. I don't think everyone is like that.
This woman is 30 years old, and she's working right now as a caterer for events.
I suffer from depression, and I'd been having a tough relationship for quite a while.
Yeah. That tough relationship lasted 8 years, and it just ended 5 months ago. And that afternoon, it was a Friday, and I picked her up in Lincoln Square on her way to an event that she was going to be working as a caterer that night.
Just ended an 8-year relationship, but I felt that we were pretty equal in a lot of, you know, like, intelligence and education and attractiveness. And but yeah, definitely, there are absolutely people who are always looking for someone above them in some way. There are also some. I had a friend in college tell me, like, marry an ugly guy. because then, like, he'll be happy with you.
If everything was pretty equal with your past relationship, what it was that, created the rift?
It was basically our brains just didn't work the same way. Our communication was very different, and we tried for a long time, but, like, we didn't try productively to connect with each other. We tried, like, the ways we'd been trying, and we just didn't really pay enough attention to, like, the little ways that we communicated with each other.
So it came down to just flawed communication between the two of you.
Yeah, deeply flawed on every level. And it ended up, like, in the last year or so, we realized we were always, like, assuming the worst of each other. Like, when one of us would say something, we would assume the other person meant it the worst possible way, like passive-aggressive or rude or calculating, and we couldn't just ask each other a question without trying to figure out what was going on underneath.
Is there an example of that might clarify, like, an
sure,
example
yeah.
that really, or an anecdote that really illustrates what you're talking about in terms of the disconnect on the communication front?
Yeah, I think one of the things that he finally told me was, when I ask a question, I start out, like, asking preliminary questions, sort of like when I really mean, do you want to go to this thing with me on Saturday? I ask, like, are you doing anything on Saturday, or do you have rehearsal or something like that? And, like, get to the, because I figure there's no point in asking the question.
If the person's busy.
Right. Yeah. Cool. And that really bothered him. He was like, just ask what you're trying to ask. Like, it feels like calculating that you're asking all these questions.
These are the preliminary questions.
Right, yeah.
And so why was that so irritating for him? Like, just because you didn't cut to the chase, it was wasting his time?
Yeah, he's way more of a direct person. Very straightforward. Just very direct.
Blunt?
Yes. For the most part. There were other communication issues there. And I'm much more in my head about things, and much more sort of concerned about making sure other people, like, I try to communicate well and, like, make sure other people feel good around me, sometimes to my own detriment. But
she and her ex's communication lapses, they took on a number of different forms. Now, in the first example that she just gave, she was the one not being direct enough for him. But there were also times, despite her description of this guy as very direct and very straightforward, when it was the other way around.
I would ask him if I could do so. Like, he had a car, and I'd ask him, can I use your car on this date? And he'd say yes. And I'd even say, it's okay to say no. And he'd say yes. And because he wanted to be nice, but it was actually an inconvenience to him. And then he'd get mad later because I was using the car and it was an inconvenience. And I was like, it's not nice if you're gonna, now you're mad at me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I gave you every opportunity. I literally said, you can say no. So, yeah, lots of just across the board, lots of things like that. And after 8 years, those things sort of add up.
Those things sort of add up. Okay. How recent was the breakup?
The Ides of March. Yeah, we had a lot of the same fights for a long time. So, yeah, I think when you keep having the same fights for, I don't want to put an arbitrary amount of time on it, but like maybe like if you've gone a year and you're still having the same fights, like you should figure out what needs to change because something does.
She pushed her ex to try couples counseling and he would agree, but when it came time to actually schedule an appointment, he would never follow through.
My mom is a therapist, and I wanted to go see somebody, and he was not all about that. He has all sorts of issues with, he's got ideas about, they try to keep you sick, and, you know, that's how they continue to make money, which is not accurate, but it's really hard to explain that to someone.
Obviously, it's only been 5 months, so she's still finding her footing now as a single person. And maybe in that relationship, they'd both been settling for too long. When I asked her, though, what lessons she'll take away from that breakup, she definitely sounded more in a reacher mindset.
Well, I'm certainly taking some time to sort of, oh, it's so cliche, but like find myself. Just to really, because honestly, like, I have a pretty insecure person overall. So I think I'll reevaluate everything once I feel better about that and I'm more confident. But absolutely the communication, and making sure that just not letting things, communication issues lie for so long. Because this, like, I really appreciated the relationship, and I'm glad to have had it. But like it should have ended before it did. And it should, we should have addressed those things long ago.
I'm an artist, but that doesn't pay, so I am an office manager.
Okay. What kind of art?
Digital abstract photography. Ooh. And collage.
She's 40 years old, and she's been together with her partner for about 10 years now. And as you'll hear in this conversation, this woman is a great advice giver. I loved talking to her. And we shared the car from uptown to the Elston corridor, which is on the near northwest side. And I ran her through the very basics of my friend's breakup. And then I asked her if she bought his whole reacher versus settler theory.
I do and I don't.
Okay.
I am in a lesbian relationship, so the traditional gender dynamics don't apply. But I don't think it's limited to gender. But if we're going to talk stereotypically, which it seems like this question is, stereotypically it seems like men would reach for physical standards, and women might reach for monetary standards. But again, I think that's a stereotype. I don't think that's true of most people, especially now as the years go by and hopefully we get a little more equality. But still, like, you know, Hollywood standards, you got pretty wife, ugly guy, you know, it seems like that. So lots of guys are like, oh, I'm totally going to hit that chick. She's super hot. I'm like, yeah, but you look like a thumb. Like, what are you offering to this relationship? Like, if you're really a great person and a lot of fun and, you know, committed to being a decent and wonderful human being, chances are you can go above what your, maybe your physical level would suggest. But a lot of times those people who are looking for the hot piece of ass are not, in fact, really great, wonderful people who have, you know, a job or something. I mean, not even talking monetary, like, you know, the stereotypical Anna Nicole Smith dynamic. But
oh, right. I remember that.
A lot of people just seem like they want to shut their eyes to somebody who might not be a physical ideal when they're not offering that. So when your friend is saying he's a reacher, is it a physical thing he's reaching for, or is it the whole package, or is it that he thinks he should have this hot woman who wants to do whatever he says, and he can just, you know, look like a thumb and sit there, you know, semi-employed? Like, I don't know.
I told her, for clarification right there, that my friend does not look like a thumb. In fact, he's a handsome lad, if I do say so myself, and gainfully employed as well.
Maybe she's the one who has jacked expectations.
Yeah.
Maybe she thinks, because this is a... messed up expectations are, have no gender, ethnic limits, you know? Kind of like right. Any kind of person can be an asshole.
Right.
So maybe she was the one who was like, you don't make a lot of money, or something really gross like that, and not paying attention to the fact that your friend's, like, treats her well and is an interesting guy and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So... yeah. Maybe your friend needs to examine the kind of women that he's after. If he's like, oh, I'm a reacher, what are you reaching for? Somebody who's a wonderful person and who you're physically attracted to? Or, you know, so if he keeps having these relationships where he's reaching for something that doesn't work out, he's reaching for the wrong thing.
Right. She's talking about pattern recognition here. And I've noticed that sometimes the people in these failed relationships don't recognize recurring patterns while everybody else around them does.
Like, I know a friend of mine, he always dates guys who are really bossy. You know, it's just something about, he's like, oh, I like a guy who takes control. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with somebody who takes control, but he's telling you what to do all the time, and then you end up resenting that, you don't like it. So you have to change what you're attracted to or figure out why you're attracted to somebody who is not right for you.
Have you ever personally been in a relationship where you said to yourself, I'm settling here? Or, wow, like, I ever had a feeling of, wow, I don't deserve this person?
I think at the same time, a good relationship, you'll feel those things at one time or another with the same person.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, the longer you're in a relationship with somebody, the more it becomes deeper than just good sex or good conversation. You know, I think it's Oscar Wilde who said, if you've never truly hated someone, you've never truly been in love. So the dynamic of a long-term and lasting relationship is all spectrum of emotion. So if you're having... now, if this is something you focus on all the time, maybe that's a problem in your relationship. But if every once in a while you're like, oh my God, this person really gets on my nerves. They're just sitting there chewing, and it's making noise, and I want to punch them in the face. Why am I in this relationship? And then, like, the next day, you're like, oh, this person is this wonderful human being, and they do all this stuff. Like, that's just humanity. Like, yeah. We get on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
That's why some people never have long-term relationships, because they can't get past that. And maybe they shouldn't. That's fine.
Yeah, long-term relationships, I guess, aren't for anyone. In your current relationship, do you feel like you've experienced those emotions you just described?
Absolutely. We've been together for 10 years as of November. So, yeah.
Can you describe a time where you felt like that Oscar Wilde dynamic, and another time where you felt like, I don't deserve this person. This person is too good for me.
Honestly, it's always little things. It's never big things.
For example.
Because, little things. Like, I go out of town and come home, and, like, I had left the house clean, and I come home, and she has, like, Tasmanian deviled the entire house. I'm like, this sack of shit. I left this, why don't I live with an adult? She can't even put her clothes away, or you know, just nonsense that you think of. And then, you know, later on in the same week, I'm having a bad day, and she just asks me the right question, or, you know, does something without asking or without thinking about it, just does something nice, and it, you know, you get all those warm fuzzies back. You get a good cuddle, and then you feel better.
My dad has an interesting theory. He calls it the 85-15 theory. Hmm. So basically he's like, all right, you're going to, no, even in a perfect relationship, you're going to not be able to stand about 15% of that person.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but if But he's like, you gotta choose someone who's 15% you can live with.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, are you gonna break?
How do you react to that one?
I think that makes total sense. I don't even know if I think 15 is still pretty generous. I think it can be a little higher than that. Be a quarter of. So, I mean, because you always think that what you do is the best way. Like, as a human being, you think, oh, how I cook this meal, or how I sweep this floor, or how I balance this checkbook. I mean, it takes a lot for an adult to realize that something might be better. And when somebody else comes and goes, no, you're doing it wrong, you have that immediate reaction of, oh, who says? I know what I'm doing. Even if you clearly don't. You know, there's just that immediate protective reality.
Yes, it's people's ego.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the long-term relationship, you let that ego go. So if you have, you know, 15%, as long as it's little stuff, it's like, well, they're a great person, but they also are a contract killer. Like, but
that can't
only,
go into the 15%.
Yeah,
it
can't go, you know, it has to be something that, you know, you are not morally opposed to.
Yes.
You know, like, I could not ever be in a long-term committed relationship with a conservative, which is not going to happen for me. I find that, you know, a lot of conservative beliefs to be morally repugnant.
Yes.
And hypocritical to perhaps certain religious dogma that they expound to follow. But,
and yet, there are relationships like James Carville
that work out.
That works out for them.
For him and she, exactly. that 15% or 20% is not what they base it. But, you know, so you just have to choose. It's not a universal. I'm sure there are people out there, it's like, I love my wife, the contract killer. And, you know, if that's what works for you before you get caught, that would be, you know, that's fine.
Do you have any, I don't know, I guess, advice for my buddy and others who have been struggling with that, like
it's it's gonna seem trite, but it's all about self-examination. Because if you keep getting in relationships and they don't work out for whatever reason, like part of that is just life, sometimes things end, but if it's the same kind of ending each time and it's the same kind of experience each time, and it's not like, okay, after 10 years we've grown apart or blah blah blah, you know, if it's something else, you should examine what you're reaching for. You know, what is it? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So if you're reaching for the same kind of person and it doesn't work out, why do you keep reaching for that person? And that's not something that the other person can ever, you know, they're just living their lives. You have to try and figure out, well, maybe it's not, you know, who I'm attracted to, but what I expect once I'm in the relationship that doesn't work out. And you can still, you know, end up going out with the same kind of person. You just have to manage your expectations and change reality and goals of what you think is going, how the situation's going to end.
So my listeners really enjoy personal anecdotes, okay? Do you have any personal anecdotes of past relationships where you were able to learn that lesson? And by, it didn't sound trite at all, by the way. An experience that you can say with someone else that led you to know that that is insanity to keep trying for the same thing, or that led you to the mindset
it's,
you're in
it's
now.
Not one experience. I always used to, I never was a long-term, I was never a monogamous relationship kind of person. Like, I dated two people before my current for 6 months. That was the longest. Everybody else, it was like, I always joked around that I would have long-term one-night stands for my relationships. Like, I don't really need to talk to you or get to know you well. You know, we can hang out a little bit, but we're not going to, like, go out to dinner. You're certainly not going to meet any of my friends or family. Ugh, you know? So that was me being completely closed off. So I had to learn that if I wanted, and then I was unhappy about it. So, like, yeah, this isn't working out. So one of my last, before the current relationships, I actually started feeling something, and it totally messed everything up. I didn't like it because it wasn't reciprocated. You know, it was like we started in this.
So it was
this,
casual.
Like,
you started developed the, feelings that weren't returned.
No, which is fine, but that like threw me for a loop. I'm like, what is this? I know better. Like, relationships are, you know, I grew up in the late 90s when I was in high school, and I was like, you know, all goth and harshly affected by society. So I carried a lot of that nonsense through my 20s of like, oh, yeah, man, it doesn't matter. You know, love is bullshit. You know, all this nonsense that you think when you're a teenager and, you know, putting on black lipstick or whatever you're doing.
Angsty.
Yes, very much so. Generation X, all of that. You know, lots of flannels. fishnet, all of that. But you don't, so I carried that way too long into my 20s. And then this last relationship, it was a friendship first, and then it became a casual relationship. So I had never had the relationship part with somebody that I was really good friends with, which seems kind of, you know, not necessarily the traditional way, especially for a woman to behave. You know, traditionally women are like, oh, I love it, you know, and that was never, I wanted to be the opposite of that. And then I was like, oh, wait a second, maybe I do want a relationship with feelings. And then I had to figure out what that meant, and obviously that this person that did not return those feelings for me was not the way to continue if I wanted something successful. So it was a string of events that took me by surprise that changed my perspective.
She recognized her own pattern and then successfully broke it, which is perhaps the underlying lesson through all these conversations so far. And I have one more conversation to share with you this week with an aspiring dancer.
I think reaching and settling, that whole, like, just those two words together was, like, the whole, like, synopsis of my last relationship.
More from her in just a minute, including this analogy she gave about penguins that is strangely comforting on this topic. I know that sounds a little bit weird, but it's true. That's in just a minute, but first I need to tell you about one of the sponsors that is helping me bring you Backseat Rider for free each week, and that is TrueCar. We used it when we bought the Subaru that I drive for this podcast. It made the buying experience a lot easier for us. Like I've mentioned repeatedly, I'm not a negotiator, so buying a car, it's always been a very stressful experience at the dealership. So TrueCar is perfect for anybody else who might feel the same way. And that is because TrueCar lets you see exactly what other people paid for the same car that you want. You get to see what that car went for at several dealerships in your market. And then from there, you get hooked up with a TrueCar certified dealer that has that exact vehicle. So when you go to that dealership, you are armed with the information you need to get the car for a fair price. It's way less stressful. And plus, TrueCar users save on average more than $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features on TrueCar are not available in all states.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner, or go to podcastone.com/my survey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/my survey, or click on the survey banner on podcast1.com.
Hey everybody, another TV show to hype, and this one is a docu-series on A&E. I'm guessing that you've already heard some buzz about it. It is called Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath. Season 1 was a hit, it got nominated for an Emmy, and Season 2 is underway right now on A&E with 10 all-new episodes. And this series delves deep into some shocking accounts of abuse, heartbreak, and harassment that some of the people who have left the Church of Scientology say that they have experienced and decided to speak publicly about. So tune in to Season 2 of Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath, Tuesdays, 9/8 Central on A&E. You can also catch up on any missed episodes on the A&E app or on aetv.com.
I slay tables, or I'm a waitress. Mm-hmm. I call it slaying tables.
Right there, she was leaning over to tie her shoes in the back seat because she'd been running behind and was gearing up for an evening shift of slaying tables, as she puts it, at a bar in Lincoln Square.
I actually have my BFA in dance. And so I've been, you know, chasing the dream and just bouncing around and just kind of learning new things and trying to figure out a way to put it all together and, you know, eventually not have to wait tables.
Pays the bills, but it's a taxing job, especially by the end of her work week, which happens on Sundays.
There's like a certain kind of like presentation you always have to have, and I serve brunches every weekend. So, I mean, like, in Lincoln Square, you have to, like, you know, put on your best face and just, like, finesse in adversity.
This woman is 27 years old, and she grew up in Wisconsin, and that's the same place where she felt like she eventually outgrew the dance scene.
So how long have you been in Chicago, like, you know, doing the restaurant thing and pursuing dance on the side?
For about 2.5 years, I decided to make my move and executed it in a matter of 3 weeks. My brother lives here, and I was just ready for a change and ready for, like, new dance adventures.
Our car ride from Rogers Park, where I picked her up, to Lincoln Square, where she works, was about 20 minutes. So after talking about dance for a while and telling me how people often mislabel certain styles of dance, I briefed her on my friend's recent breakup and asked her about his labels, Reacher and Settler.
Have you ever, in your past relationships, have you ever felt like you were reaching, or have you ever felt like you were settling?
Yes. I think reaching and settling, that whole, like, just those two words together was, like, the whole, like, synopsis of my last relationship. You know, I was reaching a lot and trying to, like, rise above my ego and try to, you know, be mature in, like, whatever that is either. But, you know, just kind of, like, go about handling a relationship a little bit more seriously. And I kept, like, waiting for a change, basically, after a while. And so, like, I was reaching and reaching for hope for so long. But I think I also was settling because there's also, like...
Because the person wasn't changing.
Well, yeah, the person wasn't changing. And also, like, I was also scared of, like, what it would be like to just be without them, too. Which, I mean, like, y'all gotta get over that real quick. Because, I mean, if that's the only thing that's on your mind, like, about staying with the person or not, then, like, then you gotta go. Like, it's so much more than just that. It's been a while since I've been in that situation, but...
In that situation, what were you waiting for the person to change?
I think following through with what they said they were going to do, I think communication was a huge issue.
What did they say they were going to do?
Communicate. And you know, and so, like, it would be the cycle, you know, I'm going to communicate, they communicate, fizzles out, I get angry. You know, and the cycle starts all over again, and it's just like, you know, and it was just like the cycle happened too many times.
When did you notice that there was a lack of communication? Like, is there an anecdote you can pull out that illustrates that? Like, would there be silence, or would there be things building up under the surface that weren't talked about? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, and, you know, and it gets a little bit more complicated, because probably about... just shy of a year of being together, they started, like, behind closed doors abusing, like, benzos.
Benzos, to my understanding, are essentially sedatives, like Valium or Xanax.
So then, I mean, there's also that in the mix, too, addiction. And, you know, it's like I didn't know. And, like, I knew something weird was up, and I asked, and, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to trust you when you say that you're good, you know. However, like, until I prove otherwise, but, you know, I was really trying hard to trust. Mm-hmm. So that was difficult.
At the time, part of her did have a gut feeling that she was turning a blind eye to the addiction.
I didn't even find that out till, like, and that wasn't even confirmed until well over a year of the breakup. So, I mean, like...
After the breakup, or...
Mm-hmm, after the breakup. It was him. He blew me off, and it was my best friend's wedding. And that was the last straw for me. Like, it was just so clear right then and there. I was like, fuck that. You've done that way too many times. You promised me. This was a big deal. And you blew me off again. And I was like, it was so simple. And I've never looked back. And I think he was settling with me because... I unknowingly kind of like enabled him to get away with this because, you know, you trust. Like, that's the whole big issue in relationships that people don't trust. And I was like, okay, I'm going to trust. And it was just like,
blew up.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's been a while. And I mean, like, I've had to do some, like, a lot of soul searching and looked at it as like a huge, like, learning curve for the future. Have I been in a relationship net since? No. Mm. But I mean, like, have I dated? Hell yeah. Like, I'm having a great time. And I, you know, and I know what I want. Somebody who I recently started seeing, they said something really beautiful about penguins. And, you know, like in Happy Feet, you know, like they kind of play on this thing that penguins do, like how they find their mates and the other mate knows their song or whatever.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, the movie Happy Feet is, it's an animated film. It's a kid's movie. And it's about emperor penguins and how they each have this unique song called a heart song to attract a mate. And that song is so unique that evidently it attracts the one female penguin that's able to recognize it.
He said that when the, you know, male and female penguins match up, that, like, only those two know their song. And so that's how they, like, find each other. And, you know, and I think, like, there is an essence of that. You know, it's like, there's this connectivity that you kind of feel like you already had, but, you know, like, you know nothing about them.
This guy she's seeing is obviously a great talker, but I do like the analogy.
I think it's really beautiful, and I think it's a really cool perspective to have on love, and it almost gave me a little bit of solace, too, when, I mean, like, as I continue to, like, meet, you know, people in the future, that, you know, like, it's okay, our songs just didn't match up.
To my newly single friend, who definitely has a unique song, regardless of whether you're a reacher or a settler, I'm going to go with that last woman's smooth-talking love interest and agree with him. Your songs just didn't match up this time. But there is someone out there who will recognize it as soon as she hears it. All right, that's my pep talk, and I want to thank all my passengers this week for sharing their wisdom on relationships and breakups. And that's going to do it for me for this week. But as always, I'd love to hear from you on this topic. I know everyone in the Backseat Rider community on Facebook would as well. So please join up with us there if you have some perspective on this. The group's now grown to about 900 people at this point. It's a great place to chime in on this or any other episode of Backseat Rider. And all you have to do is search Facebook groups for Backseat Rider community. We'd love to have you. Also, one last quick reminder to please sign up for Lyft using my promo code Backseat Rider. It's all one word. And that is for new users of the Lyft app. That code is good for $50 in free ride credit. And if you use it, it really helps me keep this podcast going. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin and produced by me with the help of Louis Kazmarek. Also, thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the all-new Podcast One app, which is available in the App Store and Google Play. It's got all kinds of new features on it. And of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts.